Hey, everybody. Thanks for listening to Shop Talk Show. We have two sponsors, Environments for Humans, promoting their SAS Summit. That's S-A-S-S Summit.com that I'll redirect you to where you need to go. I bet you can guess what it's about. It is an online conference all about the world's most popular CSS preprocessor, SAS. Fantastically awesome style sheets. Full day. Deep dive into SAS from workflow to cutting edge stuff, the future of SAS. Save 25% with coupon code ShopTalkShow and our sponsor Media Temple, who hosts the Shop Talk Show and CSS Tricks. A really good hosting company. I'm happy to vouch for them and their quality of support and all that stuff. If you are signing up for a new Media Temple hosting plan, use coupon code ShopTalk there too for 25% off. We'll tell you more about both those things later in the show. But for now, let's kick things off.
Shopomaniacs, you're listening to the Shop Talk Show podcast, front end web design development. It's me, Chris Coyer. Chris,
oh, it is a very special show for you. It is our 37th, the most undistinguished number in the first 1 to 100. I've decided it's our 37th rapid fire episode. Oh my god!
That's a prime number.
I believe so. I actually have no idea, but it looks very prime. It has prime-like characteristics. I bet you're right.
It's maybe our last prime number for a while.
Could be. Maybe 47? Hey. That seems prime-like. I have no idea.
It seems prime.
I know the definition of prime, and I just can't work it out in my head that quickly. Here, please keep sending us your very strong opinions on whether you love or hate the laser. We're getting a lot of them. People, you know, almost more hate for the laser, which I enjoy because I just absolutely don't care. It's just a, like we said before, it is the HR element of Shop Talk Show.
We get a lot of like, bring back the guns, oh my gosh. You know, it's like, and then you bring back the guns and then people are like, I have to take my kids to school in a school zone. And then you're like, if somebody has a better suggestion that is not polarizing, maybe airsoft guns or paintball guns that just go.
We'll keep messing with it. We'll keep messing with it. Or something, just for the specific reason that it doesn't matter. But the deal with rapid fire shows is there's no guests, no drama. We just try to get into it as fast as we can, and we're already not doing a good job of that. So let's get right into the questions. Tyler Pope writes in, I hear a lot of people asking about mentorships. So I made a site called Hack Mentor for people who are looking to for mentors or mentees. I want to learn MVC, so I thought it would be a fun project to get some concepts down. If you feel like checking it out or giving a shout out on the show, that'd be great. You know, we do this when we can, and I feel like we've talked about this mentor-mentee thing a bunch of times, so I thought we'd just give a shout out to Tyler and his project. Hopefully it lives on, and it's some, you know, you can use it to find a mentor or a mentee or something. It looks like there's not a ton on it yet, but maybe we'll give it the old Shop Talk Show boost if we can. And people use it to hook up some mentors or whoever. Congratulations, Tyler, on launching something that is the world's hardest thing to do. So that's pretty cool. And
I think it's awesome. I think everyone needs to go to your Twitter.com client and tweet out a link to hackmentor.net. This is such a common question on the show, right? If I want to mentor somebody, how do I do that? I'm a mentor, or I want to be mentored. How do I do that? I mean, even if it's just like you need somebody who's a step ahead of you to like QA your code or something like that, you know, like just whatever. That is just invaluable, I think.
Right. So. You know, and there's like IRL versions of it, which tend to work out pretty good. I was just talking to our previous guest, Katie Kavalsen, about she had like a real life mentor that she met and talked to, and it worked out really well. She got like lots of good advice. It was a really good relationship. I think the person who, the mentee, it's kind of a complicated mentee, what a weird word, ended up like getting a job and stuff. It worked out really well. So it's like a real life thing that there needs to be more of. Congratulations, Tyler. hackmentor.net. Let's do another one here. What do you got, man?
Jake Boylan writes in, I use SAS and Compass with Singularity and Breakpoint. I've been looking into integrating Grunt into my workflow, but I'm having trouble finding a good solution to managing SAS, Compass gems and plugins and NPM dependencies. It feels like wonky to use Builder and NPM. My project has a lot of configuration files in it. Is there a better solution? I was looking into Bower, but I don't think it'll help much. Christopher?
Yeah, that's weird, right? It's kind of like he's using SAS, probably Ruby, because it's got Compass, which is definitely Ruby. And then Singularity and Breakpoint, which maybe those are not gems, but are, you know, because SAS and Compass are Ruby, they're gems, you know? And Singularity and Breakpoint, maybe they're not gems. Maybe they're on NPM instead, which wouldn't surprise me. I didn't even look. I should have looked. And then Grunt, which is definitely on NPM. So it's like now you have this, now your process is split up, right? Or like, I don't know, when somebody like gets started working on your project, they have to do bundle install and they have to do NPM install and the things are separated across different things. There's a lot of stuff in the stack, which just means there is more that can go wrong and stuff and will go wrong. It is kind of nice having a more simplified stack like that. Is there a better solution for this? Kinda. I mean, you could drop Compass, depending on, I'm not sure what you're all using it for, but the history of Compass was largely vendor prefixing, so you could get on auto prefixer instead. Unless you use Compass for something else, I'm not sure. I think Compass's popularity is falling off a little bit. You know, no diss to Compass. It was a beautiful thing, and I'm just not sure where its place is in the world anymore, if it's changing or morphing. I think they kind of want it to be changing and morphing, so maybe we should, you know, talk to some Compass people in the future again. But anyway, you could drop that and try to get on LibSass, although anybody who I've ever known who uses LibSass is like always kind of like at war with it, like always. Even Dave was the other day. So I'm always like, never.
LibSass is awesome for about 2 weeks. And then you're like, why did I choose LibSass? What if we're having a problem? Oh, I couldn't use a percentage. I couldn't, or whatever. I couldn't use math.
Math like as a part of
number.
Random. Maybe random is what it doesn't have for some reason. I think it got more complicated than that because you tried to call a mix in a weird place.
Yeah, you couldn't echo a variable in a for loop or something like that.
It was weird. And it's like you don't want to be messing with that. So it's not like it's getting much more complicated than this, though, right? This is probably about as complicated as it's going to get, unless you start using like a Python package manager too or something weird like that. Bundler or Bower, didn't he mention Bower in this, or is that another question later? I feel like that comes up.
Jake was looking into Bower.
I don't think that's going to help you. Bower is like for including like static things. It's not for like. Well, I guess it is. It's kind of similar, but I don't think it's going to help you with this necessarily. There's no like Bower version of SAS, you know, that's not a thing.
Yeah. So you're going to want to get whatever Grunt SAS contrib or what a Grunt Compass or, you know, whichever
it's
one.
No wonder
you want
people
there.
Are confused by this. I'm sure people's heads are spinning right now. This barely makes sense.
Yeah.
To me.
And there is a way, I mean, like you could write a Grunt function, like a Grunt little plugin that calls and makes sure your rake file has all been set up or your like bundle install has already happened, like like Grunt setup or something.
Grunt setup that has Grunt bash that runs.
Yeah. A Grunt. I wonder if there's like Grunt bundler.
This is too nerdy thing. It's not that big of a deal to have a gem file and a grunt file and a package.json and stuff. That's pretty common in projects these days. I would just roll with it until it's a huge problem. I know what you're talking about, though. The world is weird, and I think someday we're headed towards a world where it will be just a package. I don't know. I know Ruby's not going anywhere, but I think the node also isn't going anywhere.
I'll just read you a file structure from one of my latest Jekyll installations. I'll just, you have the Git, you have the SAS cache, you have the layouts, the posts, the site. your assets, your CSS that gets generated, you have images or that goes in your assets. Then you have a node modules folder, a JS folder, a SAS folder, and then it's like a gitignore, a config YAML, a gulp.js, a package JSON, an index.html, a gem file thing. And that's just for Jekyll. Man, it's a bummer. It's quite a bit of stuff. And then, like, yeah, when you have to hand it off to people, it's also like, hey, do you have these two like competing backend server languages installed? Because I hope you do, or else you're going to spend all day.
Yeah, and then you work with some weird smarty pants, and they're like, oh, you have a different version of Ruby. No problem. We'll just want to use one of those weird things that allows you to run separate versions of Ruby on different projects.
Yeah,
that won't be a problem, and it's never is for them, but for you, you're like, oh my god, that broke my other Ruby thing. Okay, enough.
There's a really good exchange on Twitter about that the other day where somebody was like, Ruby is so hard, you know, and then it's like Ruby people being like, NPM is so hard and or like never works for me, blah, blah, blah. And then it was somebody, Tom Dale, who works on Ember. He was like, we never have problems with like Bundler or whatever. And then Andrew DuPont, who... I don't know if Andrew's been on the show, but he was like, yeah, because you work with Yehuda Katz, who like wrote Bundler. So if you have somebody who wrote Bundler on your team, I'm sure Ruby works just fine. But anyway,
we should get that
was much better
on.
In person. Is the retelling wasn't so good.
I was there. I felt there. Okay, let's do a sponsor. We have Environments for Humans with their SAS Summit coming up. We told you about it at the top of the show, so you probably already know about it. They've been sponsoring for a long time. They're our good friends. I just saw Christopher Schmidt down at the Dribbble meetup down there in Austin while I was down there. We were talking games and stuff. In fact, he recommended to me a game, Guillotine, which is like a little easy-to-play card game kind of thing, and I ordered it, and it just came in today, Christopher. I can't wait to play it. Anyway, him and Ari and a gang of volunteers put these things on. The summits are their like keyword for online conferences, meaning that you can attend the conference from anywhere in the world by visiting the conference in your web browser, which means you can also work at the same time if you need to, although you should probably pay attention because they're going to be pretty sweet. This is a full-day deep dive into the world's most popular CSS processor, preprocessor, SAS, which we just talked about 2 seconds ago. If you want to go to it, really get your SAS on, 25% off with the coupon code SHOPTALKSHOW. Go sign up at sasssummit.com. So much stuff. So much stuff. The future of SAS. How to use it in your workflow. Understanding modular CSS. SAS and responsive layouts. Good stuff.
Little Easter egg. If you start typing in the URL into your browser, there's a curse word. Anyway.
Ass. Oops.
Little Easter egg.
Oops.
All right. Here we go. Thanks so much for sponsoring. Darren Hulse writes in, just listen to episode 115 in CodeKit. Looks like an amazing application. I have a question about using it in a Rails project. I think I recall Chris saying that he uses it when working with Rails. Can you explain the workflow for that? Since the asset pipeline handles all the CSS JS pre-processing automatically, I'm not sure what I'd need CodeKit for.
You wouldn't.
Thanks.
You wouldn't if you're using the asset pipeline. You should definitely not even try. That's not a good situation there. Just let the asset pipeline do it if you want to, and that will handle all the processing of your SAS and CoffeeScript and stuff. So that's cool. And then if you want the live reloading stuff that comes with CodeKit, then use Guard, because Guard is just like a Ruby file watcher thing where you can have it run tasks and stuff, and it's fairly easy to configure Guard to watch your newly compiled assets and trigger the live reload thing, which uses the live reload browser add-on thingy. So don't use CodeKit in the asset pipeline, but just because you're working with Rails doesn't mean that you have to use the asset pipeline. In fact, a lot of people hate it and don't use it, which means that you could be managing all your assets just like in the public folder, and if you're doing that, then you totally could use CodeKit. You would just, you know, probably drag the public folder onto CodeKit and have it watch the stuff in there and be compiling your assets and all that type of stuff. Then the URL that you tell CodeKit where your site is, you know, to like do its weird like forwarding magic stuff, you just put that in there, and I assume that will just work. So use it with the asset, you know, use it if you're doing your own thing with assets, or don't use it if you're using the asset pipeline. And I like the asset pipeline, so whatever. Okay.
Well, there you go.
Let's see. We got Neil O'Lara. Did I do that right? O'Lara?
I think you did. Neil O'Lara.
My question is this. Since the advent of tablets and smartphones... The advent. When was the advent of a tablet? I suppose we could put a point on it. Pre-iPad.
2007 would be the iPhone. 2009 would be the.
Wow, that is iPad. Not that long ago, isn't that? Well, I'm sure there's a few tablets before, but it's usually the Apple thing that kind of seals the deal. I have noticed that my clients are a lot less concerned about desktop legacy issues, meaning you know old IE. And then the question becomes, so should designers be more emboldened in their advising of their clients to ditch old legacy desktop stuff and get them to spend their money and time and stuff on focusing on the smartphone thing? I think what he's saying is that, like, clients aren't, you know, they're often, like, worried about one thing. They have, like, one thing up in their mind, and they're just like, this website don't look good on my phone good. Please make it look better there. Or they're like, I got IE7 on my computer and this website doesn't look good on it. You know, like they're not, you know, I don't know. You can't just put clients in a bucket like that, I realize. But I feel like that's such a common thing, is that they're like, their mind is on one thing.
Mm-hmm.
And should you fix it to them? Yeah.
I think. Just in general, there's a lot less concern about 6 through 9, i.e. 6 through 9. 8 and 9 are probably the biggest concerns, you know. It depends on what your client does. I mean, is your client just somebody who is like a metropolitan client, you know, and they're going to have like whatever, mostly, you know, I don't know, a dog washer or something in the city. Are they in... That's going to have a different clientele than a dog watcher or washer. I said washer, sure. Somebody who washes dogs out in the country, in the sticks, you know. So that's going to be totally different because that's probably older technology out there, possibly. So I think it sort of depends on where your client is. I would maybe – you can always pull them and just be like – How do you feel about supporting older browsers for more money? And they'll be like, no, I don't care. But they may also, I don't know. I'm not helping here, am I? I just did IE8 stuff like today, like 2 or 3 hours.
Wow.
And I can put like whatever your hourly is times like 2 or 3 hours just to solve like one little search form in IE8. I mean, dude, it was brutal. It sucked. It was hard. Probably not worth my client's money, but like they have like a very high IE8 need. So I have to do it.
That's
but
the
it's
job.
Like, yeah. And so it's, but I'm like, well, I probably will make a case that they need to ditch it or at least just offer them like a very skinned or slimmed down view. You know, they don't get an A+ experience. So.
That's kind of the question that I thought of when I read this was does it matter what your clients are so focused on? For me, of course it does, because you need to make them happy. But it's like, should the websites that you build be subject to the kind of the whims of what they're thinking of? Or should you be like, I know that mobile and small screens and differently inputted screens and stuff are so important. So even if they're worried about IE7, I know that I should be focusing my time on a cool tablet experience or something, even if they're not asking for it, kind of thing. Is that how you would approach it? Like if you had some client that came to you with kind of some outdated concerns about browser compatibility, would it be like an education moment, or would you just kind of do the smart thing anyway?
Yeah. I mean, I think what you do is if if it's an existing site and they have data, you ask them about that. You say, oh, well, that's interesting you say that. Maybe we could get some data on how many people use this. You know, I hear from a lot of people that, you know, if they're in enterprise or something like that, if, you know, like Ford, for example, is notorious or something. They have all their computers on IE8, and it's like IE8, whatever, Quirks mode or something like that. So that's something to be concerned about. You know, I mean, it depends totally on your client. I mean, should you like spend, you know, if you have 10 hours, right, to build this website, do you want to spend three of them? Do you want to spend three of them making it work in one browser, or three of them spent working in all the browsers? You know, that's sort of your choice, and you can kind of offer it to the client in that language, you know, like, which one would you like me to prioritize? Which one's more important?
That sounds
like,
smart.
Like a tablets. Do you want it to work on phones? I mean, that's like the most simple like debasement of our profession, I think. But it's like, do you want it to work on a phone? And they'll be like, yes. And then you're like, cool. Well, I'll prioritize that, you know? So it's tough. It's tough to explain that sort of stuff. So
good
I had
luck.
I had a client like give this feedback, and he was like, oh, this is ugly and this or whatever. And it was like totally a third party thing I had like no control over. And I'm just like, oh, okay, here we go. We'll figure it out from here. We'll start. Okay. Clients be tripping.
All right. Good luck, Neil. Brett F. writes in, I'm having trouble setting up CodeKit to work with Drupal Foundation 5 setup. I have an older article, but it seems a bit outdated. Not sure where to go to figure out this stuff. I think I put this in here on purpose because it's related to the other one. It's like, let's just talk about CodeKit issues. It's hard to know exactly what you're seeing. There's just not enough information here for us to kind of debug this whole thing, I feel like. But it's like, where are you telling CodeKit to watch? You know, that's kind of an interesting thing. I don't know that much about Drupal, but I know that if I was working on a WordPress site, which, you know, a few levels deep in the architecture of a WordPress site lives the themes folder and then the particular folder that your theme is in. And if I was working with CodeKit, I would just have CodeKit just watching just that folder for themes, because it's a limited set of files, and those are really the only files that I should be changing manually anyway when working with a WordPress site. So I wonder, Brett, if you're having it watch the wrong place. I assume there's some concept of a theme in Drupal. You should have it be watching whatever that theme folder is, just for changes to your assets in that area. So I'm not sure how Foundation factors into that, really. I know Foundation is built on SAS generally, so I assume that's just kind of part of the theme folder. So I don't know. Do you have any instincts on what could be wrong with something like that?
No, I'm really not sure, because, and this is my lack of Drupal knowledge, but Drupal does seem to have an interesting way it manages assets. You know, so I don't know if it's like managed through like a form field that like gets like it siphons your CSS up into its thing to merge down into something else or whatever. I really don't know. I don't know. I don't know. I always try whenever I'm doing like something, like where they might inject styles, I try to take control of that, like whenever possible. You know, if you think of like a WordPress theme, like the WordPress plugins can't inject stuff into your CSS file, you know, your SAS file. So I usually try to just hijack that plugin to never spit out CSS and stuff like that. So that's kind of where I think you maybe need to look at is maybe hijacking those plugins and stealing their styles.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Could be. Okay. We're both pretty underqualified to answer this. I just thought maybe we could have something that would give him a lead. Cool.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It's, I mean, I just did a, just, well, Googling doesn't help you, but there, I mean, I've just Googled around, and it does seem sort of like this is kind of a known issue for people. So they're trying to kind of work it out. So, I don't know. Good luck, I guess. Good luck. I think it does have to deal with this thing where it's like printing styles. I think you should, like, you just replace, instead of PHP print styles, that's what it sounds like, you replace it with a link rel style sheet, href, PHP print path to theme / CSS / style. And so that way you're, it's hard reference to your thing. It's not like a PHP reference to a file. And that should get you the live reloading and stuff. So anyway,
right old
Chris, you got something?
Yeah, I thought we'd just do Media Temple, who welcome back to hosting or to sponsoring Shop Talk Joe. We'd love to have you. A lot of our own sites are hosted on Media Temple. Pretty good. I like their customer service quite a bit too. They're really responsive on Twitter, which I like. But you know, it's a hosting company. It's a weird thing to compare hosting companies, because I've been meaning to do a blog post about this forever, but it's hard to find the right words to say it, because it's like anyone that has a really strong opinion on web hosting is probably like, it like almost doesn't deserve to have that opinion. It was like the rudest way to say it ever, but it's kind of what I mean. It's like, if everything has went perfect for you, it's probably just because like you went perfect. And mostly what goes wrong with when websites is usually not the host's fault. It's usually you did something stupid. You know what I mean? So, and then it's so tempting to just blame the hosting company right away, but that's just like, my site is down. What the heck? And it's like, did you install a bunch of weird plugins? Yeah. Oh, well, it was that, you know, like, I feel like most of the time it's not. I mean, I'm sometimes it is, absolutely, but I feel like that's like, anyway, that was a weird kind of tangent anyway, but it's kind of like, I don't know, there's been plenty of moments where I'm like, Media Temple, what's wrong? And then it absolutely was me instead. They have lots of different hosting plans. One of them is Grid, which is like kind of their classic old school plan. It's only like $20 a month and hosts like 100 websites and auto scales. They have what they call Reddit ready bandwidth, you know? So if you get like some burst in traffic, it'll totally be fine on Grid and stuff. I haven't used Grid in a long time. I use the just their VPS kind of things. They used to call it DV. I'm not sure if they're still calling it, but that was just like VPS essentially. It's like you get your own little server to do whatever you want with. You just have more kind of specific control over the server, where Grid has a nice UI and stuff. There's lots of stuff you can do, but you don't have that like hardcore full server control as you do when you kind of level up there on Media Temple. And then they have different versions of that, and that's like really scalable. Like CSS Tricks is on like almost like the biggest one of those. It's just like hardcore hosting. It's kind of badass, even though it's not the most intense hosting that Media Temple offers. They scale like crazy to super huge sites, but then they have like nerdy versions of that, which has like nothing installed on it, but it's cheaper because of that, you know? And then they have ones that have a little more stuff built in. They have specific WordPress hosting there that's like three. You could put three WordPress on it with like unlimited bandwidth on it. And that's like specifically tuned for WordPress, which is kind of neat. So much stuff. There's a lot to talk about. You know, it's just like they have like hosting like for everybody, and they have cool like, you know, pay them more money to really watch your hosting and like suggest it and tune it and stuff. You know, you can level up that way. You know, you can pay them to like move your sites to Media Temple, which is nice if you're like just absolutely don't have the time for it but want to use them. There's almost too much to talk about in one little radio ad, so I'll just say use coupon code ShopTalkTalk for 25% off your first month. Thanks for sponsoring. Let's do some more questions.
All right. This one is from Matija Moronic. I feel like he sent that the pronunciation in before, but here we go. Hey guys, what is a good way to implement page navigation with the following requirements? No page refresh. The page is asynchronously preloaded, so there's not much waiting when navigating. Flexibility around loading new pages. For example, the new page slides in rather than replacing the current one. Is Backbone good for this stuff, or do I need something more advanced? Ooh, I think that so Matija wants no page refreshes.
Or
async page, like preloading,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And then want some pages to slide in like on a panel instead of like remove and inject, replace kind of thing. What do you think,
Chris? Well, it's not, you know, as he says, is Backbone good for this stuff? And sure, you know, right? Like, it, Backbone has some URL, some kind of routing stuff and stuff. You could totally make that work. But the, what really, but Backbone isn't very opinionated about, like, what the rest of your app structure is like. And that's what you need to be ready for this kind of thing. If you're trying to build a one-page app, you need, like, a back end that can barf out the stuff that you need it to barf out, you know, little modules and data or JSON and using a templating language and all that stuff that Backbone doesn't really particularly solve for you. So you could totally build a Backbone app for it. It's just you need to do everything else smart as well. It kind of seems like this is what Ember is like for. So that might bring more to the table than just Backbone does. And it sounds like this is like the whole deal with Ember. So maybe look into that. I don't know.
Yeah. I think you're probably gonna, like, you can do it yourself. Like, no page refresh. You can, you know, figure out how to do that. Like, you request the content and then you get it. That is kind of, I mean, that you can do that. The pages asynchronously preload. That one's kind of harder. I'm not sure any framework's going to do that unless they know what preloading, like what page is going to preload. But you could also like create one of those link rel preload.
Yeah, that doesn't work in anything. URLs. I was just testing that the other day and I don't think that's supported anywhere yet.
Fair enough. Yeah. Is it? It's like rando Firefox or something.
Or maybe maybe prefetch works, but pre-render doesn't. My idea was to use it on CodePen's homepage because you're like pretty much for sure going to hit the editor if you go to CodePen, even if you know, because you're going to like click on a pen that's cool or make your own pen or something. So I was thinking of we should pre-render the most like aggressive version of that, the editor, because why not, you know? But it just didn't. It didn't do nothing.
So prefetch is, I think, for more like DNS sort of stuff, you know? But wasn't there like a rel next and stuff like that? And then
it might just be like semantic linking, but I don't know, maybe.
I thought some browsers did some things with that. Like they kind of knew you're going to do that. There's also a ping, P-I-N-G, like anchor tag ping. You could use that to maybe hit it quicker. I don't know. But if you like know what the next page is that will be reloaded or loaded, or, you know, maybe it's instead of on click, it's on hover or something like that. You just start doing the like get this page. And then if it's a click, you apply it or something like that. And then the flexibility, I imagine that's just a transition around how your content div loads in, like when it's animating in. Like what you're like content.show, if you think about it like that, you're going to have, you just, I don't know, instead of content.show, it's like content.slideInPanel or something like that. So you're going to have to like code in something like that, but you could probably get really, really far with CSS transitions, like when it's like on show, slide it in.
Yeah, speaking of that, there was a recent post on CSS Tricks about that. If you're just kind of, but it was kind of like, in a way, it was like faking it. You know, it's like you click a link and it intercepts that click and then it adds an animation to the page, which like slides it off while at the same time it's Ajaxing in the new page and then it plops the new page on there. And then a CSS animation like loads it in as well. But it also does like a replace state in the URL. So like it changes the URL and the header right away like you're used to. It's kind of like a elaborate hack to get this done, but it ends up being kind of smooth. It's just what the end result is like a page that works just exactly like navigating between any pages does, but it just does it in a cool, more UX-y way that kind of like we expect it to work in native apps on phones and tablets and stuff. We're used to that kind of like mobile experience where you click something and it kind of slides and a new thing is in its place. You know, I think that people, and I think the premise of the article is that people are going to start expecting that type of experience a little bit more on the desktop as well, just because it ends up being good UX. It's being like, oh, I get it. That thing's going over here and this new thing is replacing it. There's like some, you know, mental understanding that happens rather than on the desktop, you know, it's just like blank, new thing is here now.
Yeah. Like you have a left and right paradigm on a small screen.
Yeah, or whatever you want that paradigm to be, but at least have one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, I could see that. I think it's just, I don't know, something about it. Like, nothing beats just a clean page refresh. And then how do you test if, like, the
your old like, school app, man,
or the device can handle that? You know, like, can the device handle this stuff? And now you have to manage state and memory and stuff like that. There's a post about Discourse. Are you familiar with Discourse?
Yeah, that's the classic Ember app. It's super nice forum software.
Yeah, yeah, it's like Ember forum software. And they have this like infinite scrolling kind of thing, right? I read this post where they like realized like you can infinite scroll, but then you hit like after like 100 messages or something like that, you start running out of memory and browsers start crashing. So they had to do this thing where they added messages but removed messages as well, like off the DOM and stuff like that. So it was pretty wild. I think
that's
JS
good UX as well.
Jabber.
Like, wouldn't it? That seems weird that you could literally go infinitely down. It's like that. Of course, that makes the DOM weight too heavy, and it makes the scroll distance too far and stuff like that. I would definitely cap something like forum threads at something like 100 or whatever. But I guess then what do you do? Mm-hmm. Do you chuck them in local storage in case you're on the way back up and then start doing it the other way, or just have kind of multi-directional infinite scrolling? I don't know. It's kind of tough. Infinite scrolling seems like a freaking nightmare to me. I'm glad I don't work on an app that has it.
Yeah. There's this thing, right? Like infinite scrolling versus, and then like people will put like a mega footer or whatever on a site that infinitely scrolls.
You're like, put your content link down there.
Yeah.
If you have troubles reaching the footer, just click the link in the footer.
Yeah. Oh boy. All
Let's
right.
do one from Man, Peter Piper, I think.
Yeah, I think so.
There's a J in there. I just started working from home, and I'm searching for some tips about how to set up my workspace. What kind of monitor are you using for coding? This is going to be fun. Are you using multiple monitors? Do you use an extra ergonomic keyboard and mouse? Do you guys have a standing desk? What kind of chair are you using? We could probably do a whole show on this, but let's just be really quick and just say what we're using, and then maybe we'll save, like, we'll have a whole workspace episode someday.
All right, I can go. I have dual monitors. I have a 24-inch cinema display from Apple.com. And then a 23-inch Dell monitor. And the Dell is not quite as great as the cinema display.
Well, it was like one-tenth of the price. Well, about a fifth of the price, wasn't it?
Well, yeah. The Dell was like $100, $200 max. I mean, it's awesome for the money. But it is, I don't know, it's a little shakier and stuff like that. I bounced my restless leg a whole bunch. But anyway, that's my setup, and I have those monitors on a bunch of wood, like some spare wood from building my deck. And then I have two kind of big tables from IKEA, so that people can co-work with me in my office. It's like the $75 Vikra desk or whatever, and then it has like these like $25 legs on it. My chair is my keyboard. I'm just using the Apple keyboard. I really love that because it's like the keys are super flat. It fits me and doesn't stress me out. And then I use a trackpad as a mouse instead of a mouse because I'm a developer and I really don't need pinpoint decision or precision. I can just like mash my hand on a piece of plastic and it works good. And I have a Herman Miller chair because I like injured my butt working. I had actual butt hurt from working in a bad, like a $25 Target chair. So I was like, I've heard advice, like you get the most expensive chair and the like least expensive desk. And I don't know, it seems good, but I just like, I don't know. It saved my ass literally. So there you go. Chris, what do you got?
I have some funny some opposites in there. So this is totally worth doing. I also have a 24-inch cinema display, which I'm anxiously awaiting them making a Retina one. It seems like that's like a little overdue.
They have my money if they make new.
Yeah, Retinas. With a thin bezel. We were both talking about that. Bezel, like, or no bezel.
Give me that would be bezel. Hot. No bezel. Yeah,
that would be really good. Although I sometimes I don't mind when I'm like writing blog posts if I'm plugged into it, because when you take screenshots, they're still at 1x, which is kind of nice and like makes a little bit more sense for the web. But anyway, you can always. I found a little trick to get 1x screenshots on a Retina display is to use that GLUI app, GLUI, and then when you screenshot through that, it screenshots at 1x. I don't know if that's a temporary thing or what, but I like that little feature. I used to have double cinema displays, and I still have two of them, but I ended up removing one of them, and I just have it as like kind of a secondary setup where I have a different computer, which is encourages me to hop over and do screencasting on there because I need to do more of that. But anyway, long story, I'm down to just one cinema display, and I kind of like the focus for some reason, but it's ever-changing kind of thing. And I've seen my buddy Tim at CodePen has a second cinema display that he turns side. He does the thing where you turn it sideways, and so it's tall, and it looks so cool. It really is cool. Anybody that's ever done that, I'm always like totally jealous of it. But it seems weird because it's like you can't detach the thing on the bottom of cinema displays. Like it's just kind of on there, and then it's like hangs off the side, and it looks weird. But maybe I'm wrong about that. Maybe there is a way to tube it up. I used to do the like basically what you do. I used to just go to like Office Max and buy like plastic, just garbage, you know, recycled plastic tables with just the snap out legs or whatever. And I didn't do it to be cheap. You know, I'm happy to buy a nice table, but I don't think there's a better table. It's like a super sturdy, strong, and you can, any chair rolls right underneath it. There's nothing on the surface of it that's like cheesy extra, you know, a little place to put your stamps or any garbage like that. It's a flat surface. But I did upgrade to a standing desk, so I now have one of those. Okay. I don't use it all the time. It's one of those ones that has little buttons that you press up or down, and it goes up and down. I did several podcasts today. Most of them were standing up. This one I'm sitting down now because I'm tired, and it's nighttime here. But I like it. I like that I can do a podcast while standing, because then I don't even think about it at all. If I like dig into some coding when I'm standing, I'm still at the point where it'll start to bug me, and I'll want to sit down. But whatever, I like it okay. It was probably worth it. And I used to have a Herman Miller, and I don't like it. So that's sitting in the corner. Yeah. I went back to a $20 Target chair. Not quite. It's like a nicer chair than that, but I just didn't like the Herman Miller. It was too, I don't know. I can't describe it, but I got rid of it.
Oh, wow. I can't believe
shocking
that.
Shocking.
I can. Shocking developments. I would say I am looking at maybe a different desk. I may have to make my own desk. I really want a desk with like cable management, like a little gutter in the back that hides
my desk. Totally has that. I should so fancy. Okay. But it's kind of, let me look it up what it is. But what else were you gonna say?
Oh, and then maybe like something I don't care about and I can drill holes into, you know, like for cable drops, or like I have all these microphone things for podcasts and whatever. It'd be cool to like drop all the cables under the desk instead of on top of it. So I don't know. You know, those like grommets, I think they're called. Anyway, blah, blah, blah. Desk. I like my desk.
I have the Next Desk Air.
Ooh. Next Desk Air.
And it's kind of expensive. But I was like,
but it's like you sit at this thing every single
day. It's part of the deal, you know. Like
I could spend money on, like, I could see myself sinking money into a desk just to feel good.
I'll tell you what. It was annoying how it was delivered, because I literally paid them to set it up because it's totally complicated to set up. And then it just came here and they just like left it outside my house. And then I talked to the guy. I'm like, what's up, dude? I like literally paid to have this not only delivered but also set up. I don't know. It's like not even, I mean, I was able to do it ultimately, but It's ridiculously heavy and stuff. So anyway, I was like a little annoyed with them for a minute. And of course, like I always do, went on a mini Twitter tirade, which I should stop doing because it's so friggin' obnoxious, I realize. But anyway, like the CEO called me on the phone. You know, they're one of those like kind of newish companies where they can still do that kind of thing. And he's just like, he's yeah. like an old Southern gentleman kind of dude. You know, it's just like, I just want to make sure you're happy, brother. You know.
I do declare.
He is a nice guy, but it was kind of like a I'm definitely calling you because I want you to shut up on Twitter kind of thing, which is fine.
Hey, squeaky wheel gets
yeah, but I didn't get any grease. He didn't send somebody over. He didn't send. He didn't give me no discount. He didn't send nobody over to install it and nothing. It's just like you, my conversation with you is such a gift that you know. Anyway, he was a nice guy. I don't mean to be an asshole, but.
I know. It's like I bought a fancy couch from a fancy store, West Elm, from my office. It was delivered with no legs, and the guy who delivered it was like, "Oh, I thought it was a couch for kids." And I was like, "No, I'm a man, and I bought this from an adult store, like a store where adults shop, not an adult store." That's weird, but I was like, "Hey, I made a responsible decision." And he's like, "Oh, it's a kid's couch. That's why it doesn't have legs." Still doesn't have legs. Month later.
I've seen this. It's a little weird.
It's Japanese.
It has a glass. There's a glass thing on it, which can be nice. It looks nice when it's clean, you know? And then it has little holes in it for the cables to go. And then it has like a gutter for the cables that goes like in the back on the bottom so you can see no cables. And the desk itself is has a ton of electrical ports on it. So it's the power bar too, which is really nice. And then there's a bar that goes across the middle and the bottom, which is because I need somewhere to like put one of my legs up when I'm sitting. And it has that, or standing is useful. And then it's really smooth controls with little settings. So I go, my setting for number one is all the way up, and my setting for number two is all the way down. So you just kind of hold it down. It really, like, I could go all the way up right now, and you guys wouldn't even know I'm doing it. My desk is literally going up. Can you hear anything?
A little bit. It sounds smooth. It sounds like an airplane taxiing.
Yeah, it's super.
That's
super
great.
Chill. Anyway, I'm not trying to be
Buy one because I don't care. I want the cable management.
Yeah, that's pretty sweet. Cable. So it's there's like no cables on the desk, so it looks like one of those like blog posts where it's like, "Show me your workplace," and it's like an apple on a table, or not, you know, like the fruit. It's like this amazing workplace. There's like, where's like the 10,000 cables hanging everywhere, like mine.
Martin Wolf was like, "Hey, send me I want to do like a people in their workspaces thing." And I was like, "Oh no, mine's too ugly."
I was in it and I emailed Martin back and I said, "Can I do like, can I go over the top ridiculous the other direction? Like I was going to just go get my trash from downstairs and just dump it all over everything and just have this ridiculous photo of just a trashed workplace." But I had to travel and I just didn't have the time to do it. So I just snapped a picture and was like, "Here you go." But it would have been funny.
Dude, I don't need to fake it. Dude, I'm like 80% sure there's a pair of underwear on my desk right now. it is hideous. It is embarrassing. There's a bill from like 1996 on my desk.
You're welcome, everybody. I'm sure this is what you wanted to hear, that we're just steeped in filth.
This is why you... All right.
No, mine's too. There's a candle burning. It's very nice. Okay, we should maybe do one more question, though.
All right, here we go. Jeremy Lawson writes in, "My websites are getting more and more heavy with images and animation, and my boss's clients are complaining that things take too long to load and is not very responsive to user interaction. I've tried several different libraries like Preload, JS, and various jQuery plugins, but I'm not getting a result I'm looking for. In Flash, I would have a loading animation and progress amount before I showed any content. What are your suggestions on how to get my page load sections?"
Both of those
things
sound like lipstick on a pig, you know? You're like, "I'm having trouble with my website being too heavy and not being interactive. So the solutions so far have been to add more libraries and wish you had more spinners, You know, like, not to, you know, whatever. Apparently I'm in, like, jerk mode or something. But I'm like, that's definitely not the answer, you know? The answer is to make it faster by removing things.
Oh, my.
You know what I mean, though, right? The answer is to, you know, use less images. Or if you're, you know, and it sounds like the libraries that you were trying were probably libraries like lazy loading and stuff like that. And that can be effective, although I feel like we've talked a number of times on this show how lazy loading is like never works quite how you want it to. You know, it's like the libsass of JavaScript.
It's like, it's communism. It's like good on paper.
Yeah.
Does it work? Yeah. Maybe it does. I don't know. Yeah, I think the thing is you have to put your, like, there's like two sort of thresholds, or three, I guess. Like, is your server working? Like, are you under like a 200 millisecond response time? And that's kind of a big thing. Number two is your, like, how many kilobytes and requests are you sending, and can you optimize that? Like, do the basic, you know, whatever optimization 101, like less requests, concatenate your JavaScript and concatenate your CSS. Are you doing all of that? And then running your images through Image Optim, like, are you doing all of that stuff? And then, like, step three is getting like super next level. And that's like, the critical path, optimizing for the critical path, which means like you deliver this, whatever your above the fold CSS is, and that's a really weird loose term, but whatever that CSS is, you inject that into the head of your website, like in line, and then you lazy load your style sheet after that, like at the bottom of the page, just before all your JavaScript, and like, then your user can read content and interact with your page before anything else shows up. So, yeah, I don't know. It depends on your images and stuff like that. But for me, it's like, what, like 12 requests should be like the amount that any page ever would ever need. You know, I can't even imagine a world where you'd need more than 12 requests just to render the page, like, without images, right?
Yes.
That's a really weird absolute, but that just seems like now you've added too much stuff. So I don't know. It depends. It's hard to see without an example, but those three steps, I think, are what you're going to have to do.
Absolutely. Mm.
And you can do the whole, you know, like, I'm loading in content, but I think that's just going to piss people off even more. Because there are like studies that show people see a spinner, they like bounce because they're like, gonna take too long. Like, the best thing you could do is just deliver it as fast as possible.
Yeah.
Right?
There's a lot of, I'm kind of interested in the psychology of spinners, you know? Like, if you just make it spin really fast, will they wait longer? Or what if it, like, it's a, you know, like a bar that fills up, but you just have it fill up all the way really quickly. And then you're like, oh, it's done. But then it's not actually done. You know, like could you trick somebody into sticking around just by lying? And it's just, it's kind of like the Apple thing, right? Where it's like, if you're loading on Edge, the little spinner when you're loading a website or something on your iPhone actually literally spins slower because it's like, oh, dude, I'm pretty sure this is going slower. It has nothing to do with how fast data is actually coming down. It's just like, yeah, you're on Edge, we're going to spin this thing slower. Oh, you're on, you know, you're on LTE, it'll spin faster. That's kind of just psychology.
Oh, that's an interesting deal.
I'm pretty sure that's how it works.
I didn't know it did that. No, that makes sense. It's just like, hi, it's even worse. So, yeah, interesting. That's cool. All right. Well, hopefully we helped you out there. Good luck, Jeremy. All right. Well, thank you, everyone, for listening to yet another rapid fire episode. We're going to get some complaints about that. Thank you very much. Be sure to rate us up in your podcatcher of choice. We'll be back in a couple weeks with another live show. But in the meantime, we've got some rapid fires while Chris and I are conferencing about.
That's correct. So,
we appreciate you guys, and anything else, Chris? You got anything?
ShopTalkShow.com.